Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 356 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Leo Dion in Lansing, Michigan.
Hey, Tim. I'm really happy to be back on.
Cool. Good to have you back. We're just talking about the pronunciation of your name. So I grew up in St. Catharines, Ontario, when I was, before our high school or early high school. And Marcel Dion was the captain of our St. Catharines Blackhawks. And I believe his brother was a goaltender, which I was. And I believe his brother also played a few games in the NHL as well. So the Dion name is kind of a well-known name in Canada. In fact, we had Dion Quintuplets, in Quebec.
Yes, that was in Quebec. You got Celine. Yeah, Dion is everywhere in Quebec,
Celine, sure. Dion, yeah, of course. I forgot about her.
Yeah.
I have to give back my Canadian citizenship now.
You did refer to hockey, so you're okay.
That's true. I got the hockey out of the way. And we should mention Tim Hortons, just, because that's part of our heritage. Yes. And poutine. You have to talk about poutine.
That's good stuff.
Although it wasn't really, I didn't have poutine until I went to a St. Catherine or to Quebec City, Quebec, I guess. Cool. All right. So, what I'd love to know, what our fans would like to know, and for those of you driving at home, I don't have any follow-up or fact check because, our last episode was perfect. And I'm kind of curious. So, you and I I've been on your show. I think I've been on your show twice, two of your shows, different ones, right?
Yes.
Mostly talking about core data. I think did we talk about neuroplasticity? I can't remember. Brain hacking?
Yeah. Neuroplasticity was okay productive. My old podcast. Right. And then, we talked about core data on Empower show, Empower Apps show. You talked about core data and CloudKit and how that worked really well for you.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been playing around with, I'm rewriting one of my main apps, but I'm actually now using core data, cloud, and CloudKit it was SwiftUI. That's the third piece, right? So I'm getting the syncing and getting the persistence and that kind of stuff. And so it's kind of funny that, you're using an Objective-C library, core data framework, right? With SwiftUI, which is the new hotness. And then, CloudKit, which is finally working. I think the first couple of tries at core data and the cloud weren't too cool. So yeah, but more about me, less about me, more about you. So why don't you tell our listeners and viewers and your listeners too, I guess, viewers, how did you get to where you are and what are you kind of doing these days?
Oh, sure. How far back should I go? Like college, well, I guess?
Let's start with your iOS career. I guess that's let's start there. We can delve into the
fantasy. So when I had a jobby job, It was a .NET shop. Everything in the Midwest is either Java or .NET. I don't know if it's the same in Ontario, but .NET is everywhere. And we built a, I was working for a company that did a Silverlight app, which was like a map, an interactive map, it tapped into whatever Bing Maps was back then. And then they wanted to build, this iPad thing was becoming a big deal and they wanted to build an iPad app. So I was like, okay. And that was my first foray into building for Apple hardware. Built the iPad app version of the same Silverlight web app. And that was when I jumped into Objective-C. This would have been retained release days. This would have been, yeah, it was like really early on. I did not like, well, Xcode was okay, but it was nowhere near as nice, I think, as Visual Studio was at the time. And then from there, you know, I always wanted to start my own business, go on my own, be a freelancer. So a couple of years after that, I started going into contract development, and I was doing everything and anything I could do that would get me money. And then probably I would say in like the last 6 years, I've really like honed in on the Apple space. I still do some web development for sure, because people still use web pages, but Swift and Apple stuff has just been my bag, I guess, for the last 6 years, and really deep diving into that. I think I'm unusual in that I know a lot of devs like focus on iOS, and you'll see a lot of iOS, Swift UI. How do I make this cool animation and things like that? But I tend to like go into the weird corners of Swift and do server-side stuff or watch stuff or Mac stuff. Haven't done TV stuff yet, but or just like really into like building little packages and stuff. And obviously we mentioned I have a podcast now, Empower Apps on Show. It's also on YouTube, on my Bright Digit, which is my company's channel. And yeah. So
hit the subscribe button. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean, I've been really deep diving into Swift and all the weird things I can do in Swift that most people don't find. So yeah, that's a little summary of it.
Are you building server, like you're building web apps or something like that, websites with Swift? Are you building server-side Swift stuff or
yeah,
like APIs?
Yeah, a lot. I try to think of the most complicated Swifty thing you could possibly do.
So I guess if it's the hardest thing out there, that's where Leo will go.
Yeah. So I've been really interested in sharing health data. So I've built a couple of watch apps, GBeat and HeartTwitch, which basically stream your health data. One is for live streamers. So if you're like a live streamer, I live stream my workouts every morning at like 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And HeartTwitch is totally in Swift. The watch app is in Swift. The server is in Swift. Obviously, the web interface is Vue.js and JavaScript.
So where does the live streaming? Where does that go? Like, what's the? Is it going to like at your own site or?
It goes to Twitch. I have a Twitch channel.
Oh, Twitch. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So I have a Twitch channel. Heart Twitch app is the name where I live stream all my workouts to. I don't think anybody watches it.
I was going to ask you, how big is the audience for that?
Yeah, no, not very big. But for me, it's like more of the motion of running the app and like seeing what it feels like than anything else. And yeah, so like it uses HealthKit on the watch and then it sends the heart rate or calories to the Vapor server. And then that gets projected on a web page. And then you basically can use that web page in OBS to share your heart rate as you stream.
So that's kind of cool. I actually want to, I'm glad I got you on the show then, because I'm kind of curious about, I have an app idea that I want to do for personal reasons, but I'm interested in sort of tapping it. Well, I have a couple of apps right now that tie into HealthKit. Like for instance, if I log my weight, it goes into HealthKit. Or what I found recently is, so I also have like at the beginning of the pandemic, I bought a scale that, you know, it's a Chinese scale that has a little app that it talks to. And what I noticed the other day was I forgot to log my weight in the app that I normally log my weight in, and I did it through the scale, and it fed the data into the app that I'm using. So it kind of went from the scale to HealthKit to the app, which I didn't realize that was always an option. I do have I've opted into sharing the data, obviously, between the apps or between these apps. So I'm kind of curious about your experience working with HealthKit. Is it, you know, straightforward? Is it a little tricky? Are there finicky bits about it? Or can
you find it? You know, the thing about HealthKit is I'm really interested. A lot of health. So the old days of HealthKit was very much like delegate based. So like, you know, you say, hey, listen to this piece of data, and then you have some delegate that reads it in, right? Which is the typical way you do things. And there's usually like 5 or 6 steps to like start a workout. And then there's 5 or 6 steps for like, oh, I want to do goals or I want to do particular things. What I'm really curious about, and I haven't done it with any of my apps yet, is how much they've made that bridge over to async await, because that would alleviate a lot of that like strain, I think. A lot of my apps are SwiftUI based, so they heavily use Combine and like publishers and things like that to listen to heart rate. So I have to kind of make that bridge. But I'm kind of curious, okay, like have they, I kind of have gotten a hint that they've done a lot with like async stream now with getting your calories and getting your heart rate. So yeah, that's probably the most difficult challenge, is just kind of finding out, okay, what is the steps to start a workout and what are the particular steps to get calories? And then once you get calories, how do I do that in such a way that it's like manageable?
So how does the data get managed on the device? Does it live within the sort of HealthKit app sphere, or does it ever go up to the cloud? Does it, you know, ever expose anything to Apple? Like I know that there are some hospitals and stuff like that where you can share your data, but that, I haven't really seen much of that in Canada myself. But
yeah, I think that HealthKit is shared across devices. I'm not totally. I always feel like it's ambiguous to me what Apple does, because it obviously syncs your HealthKit data somehow through CloudKit, and I would assume it's in such a way that not even they can access it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's always been a question where people ask me that, and I'm like, I think they store it in the cloud because it's synced across devices, but I'm not like, there's no, you know, and I think that's true. And I also think that it's very ambiguous when they sync data. So even if that's true, like you're never going to know, oh yeah, finally my weight that was upload, like that I recorded last night is actually on my iPad as well, or whatever it is. Or Mac. So yeah, that's always the challenge with it.
So you are doing Mac OS apps as well, or are you?
Not with HealthKit. That HealthKit supports, I know in Ventura is the first operating system, Mac OS, that supports HealthKit.
Oh yeah. Do you think Catalyst app, or do you think it's the properly brought over framework?
I think it's a properly brought over framework for visualizing your health data. I think that's exactly what they're thinking probably.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that in a lot of my code, when I compile it and as a Swift package, if I do a Swift build, it assumes Mac OS. And it's like, you got all these HealthKit code. You don't support Mac OS, though. And I was like, I never had to before. Now I have to. So, yeah.
That's weird. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's dial it back. So, yeah, just thanks for the tangent on HealthKit. But it's just a bit of a personal interest. I'm sure there's people out there interested in that, too. So let's, you know, I think you sort of mentioned earlier, like, so how far do we want to go? So how far back do you go with computer technology? Like for me, the iPad was the thing that got me into iOS, but I was doing a little bit of development for about 10 years before that. But what's your sort of history? What's your history with computers and stuff like that? Like from as a young lad, and, you know, how did you get involved and did you study it, I guess, at school, right?
Yeah. I mean, so my first computer was an Amiga, which for an American is pretty challenging considering the little amount of software that you can buy for any of those systems. So once I got older, I got a PC, and then I think like really college was, I mean, I did a little bit of programming, like most kids probably, like on a calculator, where it was like, oh yeah, 10, 15, go to, and all that stuff. But when I was in college, early on, that's when I knew I wanted to study computer science. And then I got a job early on as a tech support rep at an internet service provider my freshman year. And I think that really helped me get like immersed in a more like high-tech world, even though I was just helping grandmas get their email set up.
Yeah, right.
But it helped me like immerse in that like culture and like learning PHP and then also .NET really helped with a lot of that. And then I just, you know, it kept growing. I think I'm more interested when I got my degree, I got a bachelor's and it was like there was a recession at the time, so I couldn't find a reasonable job. So that's when I decided to get a master's in digital media art technology and really got interested in like video editing and Flash and 3D art and things like that, because I'm more interested in that aspect, like the visual aspect and stuff. And I'll dabble into it in and out. But that was a really great experience and like kind of taught me some things that I really wanted to know and grow in. And yeah, that's kind of where I had gotten started pretty much.
Sure. And so how did you move into the podcasting realm? Like what was the idea behind that? I know you and a buddy started that other podcast. I forgot the name of it. Empower.
Yeah, Eric and I had started OK Productive, and then I started Empower Apps. I think, like for me, I used to do a lot of meetups, like host meetups, help with meetups, talk at meetups. And
it this is kind in Lansing of, or specifically?
Yeah, in Lansing. Yeah, and you know that stuff can really be a mixed bag. And I thought to myself, if I want to be able to like reach out there to the community in a much easier way, podcasting is probably going to get me more of an audience than going to any meetup or hosting any meetup locally. So that kind of was my interest in podcasting. I love podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time, or audiobooks on occasion. So like, I don't know about you, but like for me, like that's what I found with podcasts was just, it was the easier way to reach out to the community than having to physically be there.
Well, I think for us, you know, Mark Rubin and I talked about writing books early on in the day, you know, kind of like, let's get together and write it. But we used to do pair programming together. And, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I was actually on a podcast with Ash Furrow. He was interviewing people on there, you know, who were just coming into the business and just learning it. And it was called Springboard. And I had never even listened to a podcast before that. But, you know, but being on it and, you know, when realizing, like, I studied audio engineering a little bit as a sort of a minor, very, very minor in university.
Okay.
I studied fine arts, but there was I took a music course called electronic music experimentation, whatever. It was like, synthesizers and Roland machines and a big 24 by 8 deck and proper recording studio, right? And that's where I saw my first Apple there and you know, Synclaviers and stuff like that. So, you know, through the process of actually, I mean, of course, I was a mixtape kid when I was growing up, and I had tape recorders and stuff. This is before the 80s mixtape thing, of course, you know, but
hey, I burned CDs in high school. I'm not that.
Yeah, well, I burned CDs as an adult. Yeah, exactly. And DVDs and stuff like that when, you know, before we found out that was illegal. But did we ever find that out? I don't know. But I actually learned how to splice tape with razor blades and tape and things like that and do edits that way. And
it's like, so I, you know, I edit with like, I've edited on Audition or Final Cut, and people are always like, why is there a floppy disk whenever you save? What's that floppy disk icon? I feel like a lot of those, like, yeah, it feels like a lot of those editing tools, like, it's the same thing. It's like, why is there a knife when I want to cut these two pieces of video?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually, what you used to have to do. Yeah.
Well, when I learned, I mean, we had a 4-track recorder, which was similar to what the Beatles would have used back in the day.
Okay.
You know, they would have recorded 2 tracks onto one side and they would bounce it down to another tape machine, right? And then they would keep adding. So they might do 4 microphones on a drum kit, bounce that down to 1 track. And then they would, you know, record the guitars and they would bounce that down. And then they would, and so they would, the terminology of bouncing down means that you take the tracks and if you look in Final Cut Pro and Logic, you bounce tracks, right? Mm-hmm. When you want to move them from one place to another. So I actually use the same process for editing the podcast as I did when I was using tape and using, you know, 4-track recorders in that, you know, we'll each record our sides, right? And then I go through and I put them into, like, currently put them in Logic, as single tracks, and I balance them all, EQ them all. Hopefully, it sounds like I do that because I do. I try, and then get all the sound levels relatively the same, and then literally I go through and I cut and I do one pass of the whole podcast, and I bounce it down to a single track, and then I put it into my final one, which has got the voiceover stuff for Mike, and I've got my music and the outro music and stuff like that. Those are on a separate track, and then I edit the show, and then I put the stuff on. And as I go through, one of the other podcasters I talked to mentioned the fact that I put channel markings in all of my podcasts. Well, I don't do it quite as much as podcasts. It's not that really important, but for like the tech podcast, I make sure I put a chapter marking when we change subject, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just do that as I'm going through the final pass, if we start a new subject, I pause, I put a marker in, give the marker a title, that then becomes chapter heading, right? So I use that. I use the same metaphors that I used when I was physically doing with the magnetic tape. I like the fact that Final Cut Pro has a knife in it, because that literally is the blade that I used to use.
You know exactly what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had, like, it was like a little piece of aluminum you had, and it had like, you had, you would put one piece of tape into the channel and you put the other one in, and they would overlap like this, right? Mm-hmm. And you would take the knife and cut it, and then take the two pieces out, and then run a piece of tape without taking them out, run a piece of tape across it, and then that would become your splice. Mm, that's where the term splice comes from, right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of, it was something, I think I was reading about another term that comes up in computer programming that most people don't know the reference to. Oh, is back in the day when we had punch cards. I didn't do punch card programming. I was in the medium stream for math. The higher stream guys got to do the programming, right?
Okay.
So all my buddies in my art class who were the nerds. But you know, if you had a punch card and you made a mistake where you would where you punched the hole in the wrong place and you broke the logic of whatever the bits you were laying down on the punch card, right?
Okay.
You would take a piece of tape and you would patch the hole.
Oh, so that's a patch.
That's a patch.
Now, is it true that bug is because they had a bug in the actual machine?
Yeah, it was a lady named Grace Hopper was an early programming pioneer, and she worked. She was in the Navy her whole life, and she just passed away last year, actually.
Yes.
She was working in the vacuum tube days with an early. I think it was an Army computer or whatever.
You're in a vacuum. You vac whatever. One of those. Yeah.
And the program had a glitch. It kept stopping in this one particular place. And so they went to look, and it was all vacuum tube days, right? And they went and looked, and there was actually a moth, dead moth, shorting out a circuit.
There you go.
And she took that moth, put it in her logbook with a piece of sellotape over top of it, and said, this is the first bug.
First bug, yeah.
So if you go on the internet, nice. you can find a picture of that, of her logbook with the bug, like, literally stuck in there. Yeah. So all the, everything we, even the wheel was originally this round rock. Yeah. No. everything has a nickname, but yeah, it's funny. Cause it wasn't, I saw that, somebody had it was a joke about a t-shirt somebody found some floppy disks, and they said, hey, look, it's one of those coasters from, somebody made a save icon into a coaster.
I've heard of that before. Yes.
Actually, yes. I have one here somewhere. Where the heck is it?
Is it a 5/4 or 3.5?
It's a 3.5.
Okay.
I'm not that old. I swear I have one. Hang on a second.
So my dad had found like an old Commodore at the school he worked at. So I actually had a Commodore 64 for a brief period of time. Totally remember those.
So this is.
They were already old when I had gotten it, but still.
This is my. This is a Mac OS. Macintosh OS 7.01 save icon.
Wow.
Yeah, just so over there.
Right behind this camera I'm looking at, I have a stack of CDs, DVDs, empty DVDs. And I'm like, do I even need to keep these anymore? Yeah. Like, is it even worth it? Yeah. Like, I hardly ever write a DVD. So it's like.
Well, I have this sitting on my desk because I was looking at some media the other day, because none of our devices have CD drives in them anymore, right?
So I have an external drive just in case I ever need to hook it up. It's like a small little thing. And
well, It's funny that, yeah. You know, it's funny, speaking of which, I literally just took receipt of, I figured I'd get these things before they become completely unobtainium. But there's a company that makes or made a board that takes a SCSI interface and
okay.
got it instead of having a hard, like you had all the hard drives were SCSI back then, right? And the floppy drives okay. as well. So the old 68K, like this guy here,
okay,
that SE30, that has a SCSI hard drive in it, right? So okay. this little board, it's about the size of this thing here, and you put a SD card in it, and the SD card nice. Becomes a hard drive. So it's kind of like going to solid state media in the old 68K Max, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
So those just arrived today.
I think I still have like a floppy drive around, a USB floppy drive.
Yeah, I definitely have one of those for sure. You never know. Yeah. I mean, funny because, you know, in the early days, we didn't have, a ton of space. I mean, like, you know, you had like a 40 meg or an 80 meg, I'm talking megabytes hard drive,
mm-hmm.
where you kept all your work. And it was, you know, you just like any hard drive, it didn't matter if it was a terabyte or 40 megs, you would run out of space, right? Yeah. And so there was this cool software that came out called Disk Doubler, which would basically take all of your code and it would basically shrink it down using the Stuffit algorithm, the LZH compression.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. It would squish it down, so it actually would run. I don't know how much performance it.
It seems like it would be pretty slow if it's compressed. Well,
yeah, but it wasn't like what would happen was, you know, if you went to open a file, it would decompress it into memory. So if you wanted to run, like I have a copy of Photoshop that's compressed that fits on a 800K floppy, right?
Okay.
The problem is nothing can read that format anymore, right? So I have to get one of my old computers that has Disk Doubler on it and decompress them to be able to run them, right? So yeah, but you know, what are you gonna do? In fact, I at one point I had a Mac OS a System 6 image running on my iPad. There's a guy who wrote an emulator for the iPad.
Emulator. So
you can actually run the old stuff and play around with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's pretty amazing what kind of emulators you can run nowadays.
Yeah.
Like have a whole Mac and yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Apple's always been really cool about or really good about going from coming. I mean, how many times have we flipped over? We went from SCSI to IDE.
Actually, I could segue to something I'm working on.
Oh yeah,
talking about
sure, yeah.
But I've been dabbling a lot in the virtualization framework. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we've talked. I think you know about this, but building an app called Bushel where you can run Mac virtualization, basically. And so that's been a really interesting experience. There's a lot. It was easier than I thought it was. Honestly, the hardest part has been SwiftUI. Big surprise. But like there, I found like there's a few interesting limitations. Like and ones that I think developers, because I'm trying to target developers, Mac OS developers who want to try different things. Like they want to play around with localization or try different OSs. But you can't sign in with an Apple ID, like, at all. So basically, if you want to test, like, something off the App Store, you can't do that. You can't test flight stuff. You have to figure out, basically, some other way to run your app.
So is it because you can't log in because it doesn't understand the two-factor authentication, or just won't run at all?
I think it purposely won't let you do it. Like, I think it's purposeful because, and like I put Xcode on my VM and I was like, okay, how about that? Like, can I sign in with my Apple ID on that? No, can't even do that either. So,
have you tried the hack? Have you tried the hack where you go under your phone, get a two-factor authentication number, like, you know, the 6-digit number, then log in and append the number onto your password?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I'd try that just for science, you know? So you put in your on older OSs that don't understand iCloud two-factor authentication, right? You can put your email.
It's not a two-factor thing. Like it won't even let you. Like it doesn't even get to that point.
Oh, it won't even load the page, or
like if you try to sign in with your Apple ID on like system settings or Xcode, it won't. Mm-hmm. It'll say unable to sign in.
Try this next time. Like okay. You like open like log it. Go to your phone. Go into into your setting. Or I think it's. Hang on, let me do it on my iPad here. Yeah, you click on your iCloud account and then you go into payoff password and security. Right.
Okay.
And in that window, there is a get verification code. Right. You click that, and then Apple will reply with the dialogue that shows the number, right?
Okay.
And then do that as around the time that you're going to do it, because that code is going to stay valid for a period of time, right? Then log into the thing, like use your Apple ID and your password. It might reject it, like try it once, it'll reject it. The second time you do it, log in again. I think it creates a session token. And then that's just a theory of mine. Put in the password and append the password with the 6-digit code you got from your phone.
Okay.
Because I do that. I have a couple of older servers and stuff like that they're so old, they don't understand iCloud.
That's how I
log into the store and test flight and stuff.
Try that out. Interesting. Yeah, yeah. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, got to be old.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, like it runs really well. FYI, don't put your virtual machine on your spinning disk drive because it's slow as heck. But if I put it on my SSD, it works great. So far, so good. When I get time, I'll try to get back into getting a new beta out. I haven't done much with it in like a month and a half because I've been so busy, but it's definitely an app I want to get out in the App Store.
This is your own virtualized image or the app that runs in that space?
It's an app the app is for managing virtual machines specifically for macOS developers or people who want to like test out a script.
Right.
So I support snapshots. You can revert. Let's say you break your Mac, your virtual Mac, you can always revert back. It's specifically targeted to developers because.
So you compete in the space of VMware and all those kind of guys in terms of the virtualized Macs? Because I know that we used to use it when I worked at the bank. They used to give me a test environment to work on, and it was basically like a website. I would go there, but it would run an instance of.
No, the app uses it's a native Apple framework called virtualization, which lets you you could, if you know Swift, you can go in, you could write your own app where you can build your own VM in Swift. Like you don't need anything else. And that's what it's based on.
Oh, that's super cool.
And then you just get the image. You can get the images off of the Apple site or IPSW, I guess, has some images that you can pull up if you want to go back to Monterey or something like that.
Yeah. So what's Tagmento? I see that on your profile. And TikTok.
Where do you see this? Which profile is this?
This is on your LinkedIn.
Oh my gosh, my LinkedIn. I need to edit my LinkedIn.
Really Tim, old,
this
eh?
Is like really old, old stuff. I need to update my LinkedIn. I just started getting back into LinkedIn. I have not worked on those apps in ages. Where do you see that?
Under about.
I need to update this. Holy guacamole. This was under. I can't even find that stuff. Oh, in my profile here. Okay, yeah, this needs to be edited. I just started getting back into LinkedIn because, like everybody, I'm... Rightfully paranoid of the stability of something like Twitter. So
are you on Mastodon?
There's the elephant and then there's LinkedIn. That's probably number two right now for me.
So have you been to Mastodon? Are you on there yet? Or
I am at leogdn at c.im.
Okay. I don't know if I'm connected to you. Where's my phone? Yeah, cool. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. Cause I've been on since I think, I'm not sure if Jaime was there, but, Jay Freeman, the guy behind Cydia and
who speaks at 360. I know. I know Jay.
Yeah, yeah. He did a talk. He did the keynote at in 2017, I believe it was, and that's when he sort of said, "Hey, things you should be aware of." And he said, "There's this thing called Mastodon, and you know, it's the genesis was to sort of be a federated version of Twitter type thing, right?" And so I think everybody at the conference signed up. Or most of us did, and then forgot about it. You know,
right.
I mean, I knew I had an account because there were some really crude apps initially. And then when the whole, you know, mustification of Twitter happened, then, you know, I went and resurrected my account. And yeah, but not a cross post. I know, you know, it's funny. There's people on Mastodon that don't like you cross posting, but you know what? I'm doing it.
I'm cross posting now.
Yeah, and there's
it's funny because you mentioned Ash earlier. How was Ash involved with Mastodon?
I don't know. Yeah, I am following you at Mastodon, by the way. I don't know if he's necessarily involved in it. I know I've connected to him. He's out in Eastern Canada right now, as far as I know. Last I spoke to him,
Because I was at TriSwift, I think it was 18, and he spoke at that. And I think he might have mentioned Mastodon, and that's when I had signed up, and then nobody was there, so I didn't do anything. And then I re-signed up a few months ago. So
yeah, there's some tools that you can use to you can log into both Mastodon and Twitter, and it'll look at people Move you to follow.
Huh? Move to Don. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, there's one. And there's another one that the one I used to cross post. I just set it up and it connects your Twitter account to your Mastodon account. So when you tweet or when you go into Mastodon and tweet, then it automatically goes to the other site. So, you know, and if you put media in there, it puts a media. If you even when I repost stuff, if I go in and I like something and I decide to repost it on Mastodon, it gets a retweet on Twitter. So it's kind of cool.
Okay. Yeah. What was I going to say?
I got to say, though, the community on Mastodon is great. Like, they're just, I probably have gotten more friends and followers on Mastodon in the short few months that we've been on there. Like, was it 2 months now? It's like end of January. Mm-hmm. We just started.
It was December that he took over. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I've already got like, two-thirds or three-quarters of the two-thirds of the audience that I used to have on Twitter. So.
Yeah, what do you think of that? That we think, oh my gosh, Twitter, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
But then like people just move to another social network and it's not that big of a deal in my opinion. I don't know. Yeah. Like we think like we think these things are going to be around forever, but like they're not, and it's not the end of the world because you can move somewhere else. I don't know. Like people definitely think like, MySpace, oh my gosh, or Facebook, is this going to be around forever? Like how AOL Instant Messenger, it's like these things will go. They don't last forever. People get off and then they find something else. And and especially too, there's like the rolling age thing, right? Where I see this with Facebook. Like, okay, I was in college when Zuckerberg was in college. And I remember Facebook being big amongst college students at that time. And now these college students from the early aughts are like parents, right? Or well, older parents now. And they still use Facebook, but like, that's it. Like no college kid nowadays is going to use Facebook. And that social network just kind of rolls with that age group as it moves along. That's been really, really funny experience watching that over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It's changed the character of those sites.
Yeah, the only way that I can keep in touch with my family, my extended family, is on Facebook. I mean, I can't, they can't send me an email. They don't know how to send a text message correctly, but I can reach them on Facebook. So, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay on Facebook because I need to, my cousins and whatever, people who are my age.
Oh, I'm in the same boat, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my 60s, and so is most of my family that, some of the kids are in there too. Like one of my nephews, they're just starting college, and they got me turned on to TikTok. And it's funny because their older sister, who is, I think she's at least, I want, she's probably 16 or 17 years older. Anyway, back in 2004, this is how far back this goes, right? I was actually working on a social networking website, right?
Okay.
And in order to sort of see what was going on, and that's where I learned about feature creep, because the marketing guy just kept throwing features at me, right? I didn't know what feature creep was at the time, right? Until I realized I can't do all everything he wanted me to do. But
or I could do it all and it's all gonna be crap, but yeah.
Yeah, well yeah, it ended up being crap is at the end of the day. But I started looking at I joined High Five and Matt and all the sites, the ones you just mentioned, which I've just drawn a blank on. But yeah, she turned me on. She was in university at the time. She said, "Hey, you got to check out this Facebook thing." So I had the blue page. Remember the blue page back in the early days?
Was it always blue? I remember even before it was blue.
Well, it had like sort of a blue, like you had your sort of, it didn't have your picture. It had a sort of a blue guy and it had like a,
And
it had a menu and it was, and back then Amazon was the de facto standard for websites because they had all the categories figured out, right?
Yeah.
They had the pull down menus that all worked and stuff, right? So, and they had, e-commerce going and, so people laugh at Bezos and they laugh at Zuckerberg and stuff like that. But, they were pioneers in their own right,
They were at the time and they got it right. But like,
that same thing with Jack Dorsey and Twitter. I mean, like, Twitter was kind of a cool thing. I mentioned this on More Than Just Code a few episodes ago, but for perspective, I mean, what, there's like billions of people on Facebook, like 9 billion or something like that on Facebook.
Yes.
There are hundreds of thousands of people on Twitter. So think about that scale, right? So yeah. Twitter's big, but it's not major. It's not like mega. It's like, it's like comparing Apple to Microsoft. Apple is, you know, Apple admittedly isn't, you know, much, I'm a huge fan of Apple, much nicer hardware, much nicer community, stuff like that, but it's still only 5% of the computing market out there, right? Because everybody's on Windows of some type.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, that's kind of like, it's like Apple to Windows versus Twitter to Facebook. I mean, Facebook is going through all kinds, every day there's something new. Like Mark was telling us the other day that Trump's back on Facebook, Trump's back on Instagram, right. You know, like,
right.
Okay, well, I just have a Trump filter. That's no big deal.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't see his tweets on Twitter, so I don't worry about it, you know? So I'm soon going to have a Musk filter as well, if you'll. If you'll allow that.
I don't know what's going to happen with Twitter. With Facebook, it was just, I think they've had issues since they ran out of human beings on the planet to sign on to Facebook. And then they're like, okay, what's
sure
the
next
thing?
Are you sure they got us all so far? I'm sure there's more people on the planet.
Well, no, that's what I mean. They got us all. And so now they have to figure out, how do we get more people on Facebook? And then they're like, we can't. So let's go into VR and we see how that's turned out.
Well, speaking, that's a great segue because, you know, the only thing I have on the show notes today was I saw an article, and I'll share my screen here. Let me do that. All right. So this Reality Pro, I saw this tweet earlier. Can you see my screen?
I see my LinkedIn profile, which I love to look at because I love myself. But
oh, you see your LinkedIn profile in there? Okay. How about there? Do you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So yeah, this is an article talking about Reality Pro, which is apparently the new Apple shininess, right?
Okay. When do you think this is going to come out? Do you think March? Do you think June, or do you think September?
At this point in time, in my opinion, it's still vaporware, right? Like this is from Mark Gurman, who's saying that this is coming out. So chances are,
yeah, that's why I've been looking at Mark Gurman's stuff about it. And
yeah, he's talking about this, you know, ability to switch between VR and AR. You know, it sounds like it's going to be a single device that you'll have some sort of transparency, and you'll be able to flip between a VR experience and an AR experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how heavy it's going to be. Hopefully it's not like what's the one that Facebook Oculus it is, I think, right? I was over at my family's house. They had, one of the kids had the ocular thing going. They had to move all the furniture out of the way because, you know.
Yeah, you know, people don't think about that stuff.
You have to run into stuff. Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, do we really think it's going to come out this year? I guess that's the big question. But mind you, I'm famous for being the person who says, I don't know why Apple would want to build a phone. You know?
So, right.
Yeah.
I just don't think about the phone that makes it so perfect.
Yeah.
Is you can still interact with the outside world.
Yeah.
And the outside world can interact with you. But with this, it's like, it's just not something I can imagine people wearing that everywhere they go. You know what I mean? Especially with AR. Like, AR is nice because, you know, you can be walking around and seeing extra information. But, like, AR glasses have to be, like, they have to be like Google glasses. They have to be inconspicuous. And even those were not, like, as inconspicuous as they should be, right? It's like, how do you get away with that? And these, they just, yeah, I don't understand what the narrative is behind the headset. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you're not going to be walking around the street with this thing on because people will walk up to you and punch you, right? Because I remember back in the day when people were recording with the Google glasses, people would get upset with them, if you remember, right?
Right.
If you were wearing a Google glass. I've only ever seen
it's,
one of those.
You know what it's like? It's like, and I think that's still annoying when people are on their Bluetooth and they're having a phone conversation while they're doing five
on
other
speaker.
Things. Right. So that's like AR VR with audio only. Could you imagine AR VR with like a visual element to it? It's like I the thing about the iPhone that makes it so perfect is it's just something you can pull out and you can like look at it and still turn and like interact with people. And, with these, it's like you're totally closed off from reality. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
and they're going to be expensive. They're going to be slow. They're going to be Apple Watch Zero Series Zero slow.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, and every time Apple comes out with something, the first one always is like very okay. Like, I just don't see how version two of this is ever going to be decent. I don't know. I'm just really skeptical about it. Like, I don't see VR going anywhere for a long time.
Yeah.
Until they can make them light enough and, you know, transparent. I do want to know what you think of it. Like, I'm just kind of curious if I'm off base on the whole VR thing.
What I think about you're going to be amazed how I edit this part of the show, because I'll, you know what.
What's that?
That intro I just did, I'll cut that back in. I'll move it around. And,
okay. With the blade. Yeah, so with the blade.
With the TV magic, podcast magic. This will come before.
I'm so sorry.
Next.
I'm so
That's
sorry.
Okay. That's okay. We do this on podcast on Spot More Than Just Code all the time. We talk out of like stuff that goes into the body of the show. We might talk before we actually start rolling, and because sometimes Mark just has a great opinion and he just starts going, and like, I mean, I just slam on record. And anyway, what do I think about it? To be honest with you, I personally don't know. I mean, I don't have the fancy Apple headphones. I don't have the Air Pros like you've got. I tried them. I tried them for like weeks at a time and never really got into them. I don't know that I'm the market for, unless there's some compelling, like if there was an application, you know, an SDK or something, and there was something that I could think about doing. I don't know that I'm in the initial target market for this, right? Like the HomePod, I didn't get the HomePods when they first came out. I got them as they were just being gotten rid of, right? And then I have two on my Apple TV and I love them, you know. I have like a stereo pair and they're great. Yep. They're my whole basement audio, and the HomePods and Googles and Alexas have replaced all of our radios and stuff in the house, right? And we have watches, and we have the, you know, we both have phones, and we both have iPads. And
what is the market though?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it a gaming thing? Because I mean, Apple's not really ever been super successful at gaming.
Exactly.
I mean, they got arcade, right?
That's the thing. Is the game the market would be games, and like kind of with
travel,
the watch.
Like if you're traveling around, you're in Italy, and you look around, and you get like, because I remember like I've been doing AR and VR and looking into that since what, the 90s, right? Because
right.
that's
right.
You know, remember 90s multimedia?
Is kind of when the first wave of enthusiasm towards
and
VR
there was like
was.
The virtual sex, and people had they actually made devices for him and her, and you could be like,
oh, really?
In cities. Oh yeah, over modems and like, you know, stimulating each other. It was like, you know, I mean, so have we really come that far? Get off the phone, I'm trying to have sex. I don't know. Like, I mean, I to be honest with you, I really, other than navigation, maybe in a museum or something, you're walking around looking at an art exhibit and you get some overlays.
To me, like, they'd have to like really pivot. Like, so with the watch, when the watch first came out, fitness was not the thing. Oh. And then they eventually pivoted towards fitness, and now they've like really like they've put their weight behind it with Fitness Plus and stuff.
Thing, yeah.
I don't see how they could come out with this and then all of a sudden pivot towards gaming. Like, it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how this goes.
Well, I can tell you but they've done a lot of stuff with, what are they called? I think it's called Reality Kit.
Right.
Yeah, because I was doing some patient work for Apple a few years ago, and there's some, I got a couple of assignments on that. So I got to dig into that and play around with Reality Kit. You know, build like little cans that would sit on your desk and shoot stuff, and you could only see them.
It's very cool. Yeah.
Or you can get the C3PO, full size C3PO, and you know, or anytime they have a new product, you can get a VR or AR, just AR, AR of it, and you know, see how big it is on your desk or what it looks like next to your dog. You know, that kind of stuff. Really exciting thing. You know, but I mean, I mean, I've never really seen any compelling VR other than playing a game, like you get inside Last of Us or something, or some world like that, and you're
right.
You know, you're basically running around. Like one of my grandsons is big into Tetris, and so she plays Tetris on with a VR headset, right? With the PlayStation one, right? And I mean, like, I don't think I've ever put the headset on and tried it, but you know that. I mean, she's a phenomenal Tetris player, don't get me wrong, right? But the, I mean, like, she just, you can't compute. But you know, but like, why? I mean, to me, Tetris is like a 2D one bit graphic thing, right, from the old, was a Game Boy, right? So I don't know. Like I said, I'm really having a hard time sort of envisioning what I would use this for. I mean, right now I'm working in transportation, so why would we use this in transportation, right?
Well, I'm like thinking like fitness, but like, is this thing stable enough for me to work out and like also see my, like, rather than having to look at my watch, essentially, I can look at my heart rate while I'm working out. But yeah, I have a feeling this isn't stable enough. Whatever, a $3,000 thing on my head is not going to be stable enough for my workouts.
Like, well, I could see for navigating around, like if you're on foot navigating around,
right,
and you want to find out where restaurants are, I could see it use an inventory, like if you're walking through a warehouse.
Yeah.
And you want to know where the stuff is, or do like an inventory. Can't you look, how many pallets do we have up there, kind of thing? And these are all based on my personal experience working in warehouses and stuff like that in the past.
Right, right. But is it, you know, but museums, is it going to be so great for compared to a $500 iPad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like I've even seen augmented reality stuff at galleries where you look at the picture and they take the painting and they make it into like there was a piece at the Art Gallery of Ontario where it looked like the woman was like doing a selfie shot, you know, with the camera, like this,
nice,
on a work of art from like 300 years ago. I'm like, why? You know?
Yeah.
But that was because, I mean, that's sort of been from my experience the majority of AR and VR stuff that I've done. It's cute, interesting for about 5 minutes, and then okay, what's next, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the, I mean, unless it's like you know, in the, what was it, Fifth Element, where the character's got like, he's got like, what's the name of the character with the big played by that actor from Rush Hour?
Chris Rock.
Chris Tucker.
Yes.
Chris Tucker. Yeah. So yes, when he was on, his character on that show was, he was a TV personality, but he was like, it was like, I think there was like people walking around him, but he had like a wearable camera. So I could see something like that, like where, it's an experience thing. Maybe you want to go, you go to the Oscars or something like that, and you want to walk down the car, you want to walk the red carpet, you want to see all the stars, you want to go, and, you know, the host of the show could have the unit on, and they're experiencing the Oscars, and you and I are vicariously with their headsets on, sitting on our couch at home, experiencing that, right?
Right.
Hey, maybe podcasting, maybe you and I will be wearing a VR headset in a year, and we'll have the same conversation, and we'll like in the same cafe in Paris.
But will we have legs? That's what Mark Zuckerberg.
Or do we need to wear pants? That's more
important. Do we need to wear pants?
You know, so, and yeah, sorry I was on mute, or sorry I had the headset on mute, kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, so if you don't mind, we can jump to the questions.
Let's do this. Yeah. Let's
do this. All right, cool. All right. So I'm gonna jump in with Colbert question first. What is the best sandwich?
I like a good breakfast sandwich. I like eggs, sunny side up, ham or bacon. What is it? It's the thing called, is it Eggs Benedict? Is that like a sandwich?
No,
it's an open face sandwich. It's an open face sandwich. Well,
yeah, it's kind of like a hot turkey sandwich. It's like a muffin, English muffin, and then they put the bacon on it, and they put the egg, poached egg on it, and then they put hollandaise on top.
Yeah. That's my favorite sandwich.
It's egg Benedict.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that as a sandwich. That's
it is. Pretty good, it is. Pretty cool idea. We don't even need to discuss it.
I'm going to accept that answer as a valid answer. Cool. All right. So who's your favorite hero of fiction?
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones?
The movie guy? I like his cocky attitude.
Cool.
And I like at least half the movies. So
half of them? Yeah.
I honestly, I like all the movies, but the half of them I think are like amazing. The other half are okay. They're good.
There's a fifth one coming out, you know, right?
I haven't seen the trailer yet. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Cool. Well, there's
the odd ones are the good ones, right? So,
sorry?
The odd ones are the good ones. So maybe it'll be good.
I don't know. Is that true? Because it's not true because we had the Temple of Doom was the first one. And then we had the.
No, Raiders was the first one.
Raiders was the first. Temple of Doom was the second one. It was the one with the carts that went through the
That was Temple of Doom.
That one wasn't bad. Was that bad?
It was okay.
And then
it's
the
very,
one
it's very 80s. It's very early.
And the
80s
Sean Connery
ish.
One with the with
yeah, which
the,
is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Did that have River? I can't remember. Did that have River Phoenix in the very beginning of it?
Yes. Young, yeah. Young he young played either? Indiana Jones in the beginning.
Cool. Yeah. And then I think he had a spinoff series as well for a while. That's cool.
I don't think it was River Phoenix, but there was a young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Cool. What phrases, words or phrases do you overuse the most?
Depends on the day of the week.
In general.
People who listen to my podcast would know better. I don't know. That's a really hard one. I know I definitely overuse phrases. What was the one that I can't think of one right now. I have to go back and like listen to my show and see what I overuse, because I definitely overuse some.
Well, maybe we'll do a fact check on that in the next episode.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
I listened over hundreds of hours of myself, and this was the phrase I said the most. We'll have that next episode.
Okay, cool. All right. Cool. So apples or oranges?
Raw or cooked?
Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Oranges? Okay, cool.
But if it's a pastry or dessert, apples.
Okay. What's your favorite smell?
Vanilla.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah. Vanilla. Have you ever asked anyone for their autograph?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. which living person do you admire the most?
Like famous person?
No. Which living person do you admire the most?
My wife is amazing. So I'll say that.
Good. That's a good safe answer. Yeah.
Yeah. See, you know,
where would you most like to live?
Oh, I don't know. I think about that all the time. Trust me. I really like Chicago. I actually like Toronto, and West Michigan is really nice. But obviously, it's a little bit hard to have a family of eight in any of those places. So,
did you say eight?
I said eight. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So cool. Full house here. So, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I like both those cities are very nice and nearby. So,
what's the one thing that you own that you should really throw out?
Well, it's funny you say that. I'm sure I have a lot of tools and hardware that I never use that needs to be thrown out. Also, I'm not sure about boxes. Do you keep boxes? Should you keep boxes?
It depends. Well, I mean, if you look over my shoulder, right behind the Venus, beside the, I can't point.
I see the Lego stuff.
That right there. Yeah, those are boxes. I keep the boxes for those. But there's an original iPhone 1 back there. And I got the phone for like $60, found a manufacturer of the screen, I replaced the battery, I resurrected the phone. It still has the very first iteration of iOS running on it. So it doesn't have the App Store on it. That's how old it is.
Okay.
But I paid over $200 for the box.
Have you looked on eBay, see how much you can get out of it?
That's, oh, for the reassembled phone? With
for
the box?
Everything, the whole set.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's pretty. It's not the only thing I have that's like that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I resurrected my own iPhone. I just really recently resurrected my original iPad 1s.
Okay.
That still have my apps on them, because I mean you can't get download the apps anymore because they're
right.
2010, right? So
right.
But yeah, it's pretty cool to look at my old apps, right? So,
that is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm all about selling stuff I don't use, especially newer stuff. It's the stuff that I never see that is somewhere in the house that I need to get rid of. That's the more difficult part.
I just sold one of my X-Serves, and the guy bought it because I had the original box with the original stuff. I didn't get a lot of money for it. I just wanted to get it out of the house.
Yeah.
Right. But who's going to buy an X-Serve these days, like, unless they're collectors? But I had, you know, all the software licensing in the box and the cables and the...
Nice.
In the original box, yeah. So he was happy to receive that. He even bought I had the kit that you used to buy as a, you know, had an extra logic board and an extra power supply in it.
Okay.
He bought that from me too, just to have it as part of the set, right?
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's cool. Okay. Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
Not Doctor Who. I have never watched Babylon 5. Star Trek or Star Wars? I think, like, that's a really good question. The wife and I have been watching Next Generation for quite a bit. We have like two episodes left, but we've also had like two episodes left since the pandemic, so we just haven't gotten the gumption to finish the series. But I find it a lot more interesting, I think, than Star Wars. I think Star Wars is more popcorn fun. It's also kind of like a little bit more hit and miss. Whereas I think Star Trek, I think if you were picking a random Star Trek episode or even a random movie, you might have something a little bit more intellectually stimulating. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yep. What's the most used app on your phone? You know, there's an app you can open to see what that is, right?
Yeah. Let me do that. It's going to be boring. It's going to be like email or something stupid or messages. So don't expect too much out of this.
What, like, for me, I would have to say,
you want to know what it is? You want, it actually isn't boring. It's very interesting. Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. And why would that be?
I just like to read random facts. Wikipedia.
Cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, for me, the app I go to the most, I think, is Photos, although I don't spend, that's not where I spend most of my time, right?
Circling back to what we were saying earlier, like, I'm just not, like, I'm not a phone person. So, like, for me, if I use it as a camera with email on it, and maybe, like, to jot down notes.
Yeah, 100%.
So, like, I'm much more of a Mac person and computer person, because there's so much more I could do. As opposed to staring at my phone and creaking my neck.
True. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
That's good. I'm just like thinking, okay, like about 4 words. Is that okay?
I guess.
Helping kids grow up.
That's 4. That's good. It'll work.
Okay.
Let me see. I got a couple more questions I can ask you. Let's see. What's your favorite word?
These are good questions. Is this a Colbert one or a Proust one? Okay.
Yeah, this is Proust.
I'm looking over words I've written. I'll say bright.
Bright?
Oh. Yeah.
Good thing it's in your company name too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Always be closing, right? All right.
I chose it for a reason.
Yeah, cool. All right. What number am I thinking of?
42.
Close, but no.
What is it?
Why should I tell you?
Well, how do I know if it's close?
Well, I'm always thinking of 37, but that's by the point. Flat or sparkling?
Sparkling.
Sparkling. Okay, that's correct. I think we got one more question we can get out of you, right? You want a deep one, or you want a
deep
one? What is your most treasured possession?
Besides people.
What is your? You don't own people, do you? What's happening in Lansing, Michigan? What's going on down there?
what century are you in? I was just talking about this. Besides, you know, I don't want to ever lose a member of my family. Like, I don't ever want to lose all the photos that I've taken, because that's the stuff you can never get back. So it's not a tangible thing. That's why it's backed up into several cloud services. But I don't want to ever lose my photos, because that's the stuff you're never going to get that back.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I started scanning my old film and, you know, picture book photos. And that's what I love about the phone. You can actually just point it at a picture album now and take like a high res, you know, snap of it.
Yep, right? That's exactly, yeah, I don't even bother using the scanner now. It's just like, it's just easier for me to take it with my phone.
I did forget to ask you the most important question. What is your motto? What's your elevator pitch?
Oh, my elevator pitch or my motto?
Well, what's your motto? What's the Leo? It's Leo Dion. He's the.
Oh, I got it. I'm trying to say it in a nice way, and I'm trying to figure out how to say it. I'm trying to say, like, Leo has a breadth and depth of knowledge. There we go. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And what do you?
I had to whip that out knowledge. Quick. I should practice this. I should really have like a motto. I'm going to add that to my to-do list.
So I can tell you, so I was in a program called Strategic Coach when I was running my own business. And one of the exercises we did at the very beginning was called your unique ability. And the unique ability is the one thing or the one activity that you do best that, you know, people come to you for. This is what your central tenet of your business or whatever, personal life, whatever. All the rest of the stuff like paying bills and taxes and going to the grocery store, that's all other stuff. Putting gas in the car or whatever, right? But this one thing, what's the one thing? So that, I mean, this is exercise for you. Don't want to answer right now, but think about your unique ability. What is it that why do people pick up the phone, or why do people text you, or whatever they do these days? What are the kids doing these days?
Say I have a breadth and depth of knowledge. A lot of people, like, and I'm talking professionally, but like, and experience attached to it. But a lot of people, when they say they've brought me on, it's because, man, you know, Leo, you sure know what you're talking about. Or when you don't know what you're talking about, you're willing to admit it. So like we had talked earlier, like, I'll do vapor, I'll do health kit, and then I'll know how the two work together. That kind of crazy combination. I bring that usually to the table.
Well, okay. Yeah. So mostly in tech and you want to know what my unique ability is?
Yeah. Yeah. Besides coming up with really good numbers.
High numbers. Yeah.
Well, I think too, that people will say is I'm good at communication, in the sense of like, that's really hard for techies to like communicate lay people.
So I'm sure
that's something you have too. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
My unique ability is I strive to create honest and knowledgeable solutions that empower people to embrace change. So I'm here to help you.
I just edited my LinkedIn profile, by the way, because I realized I hadn't edited.
Oh, good. So I guess I should.
Thank you for that kick.
Kick in the butt. All right. Well, we'll wrap up. So I guess that's it for another week. Leo, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Twitter at Leo G. Dion. If you're on the elephant, it's at Leo G. Dion at C.IM. My business is Bright Digit. Everything else is Bright Digit, YouTube, etc. So just go to brightdigit.com and you can find everything there.
Cool. Thanks for being on the show. And my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine and Mastodon and Instagram and not that Facebook thing. I'm something else on Facebook, but yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn too. But yeah, that's it for me. And so until next time, see you in the future. Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Is there a video to this?
Yeah.
And where do you upload it?
YouTube to my.
Okay. So there is a YouTube channel for this.
Yeah, it's Timitra MTJC Spotcast. So sometimes we do audio, we do video episodes for Spotcast. Sometimes we do video. I mean, whenever I have a guest on, like yourself, I'll do a video episode, or sometimes I'll do a solo video episode. But those other two curmudgeons that I do the show with, they don't like to be on camera. So
I understand.
They have to put pants on, right? So
yeah, right.
Oh, I never did ask you, boxers or briefs?
They're boxer briefs, I think, is what they're
called. Boxer briefs. Oh, wow, you're like a hybrid guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. more boxers than briefs, honestly.
Okay. I'm sure our fans will love to know that.
TMI, right?
TMI, too much information. Yeah. So what are you working on these days? Like what kind of, are you consulting or are you doing?
Yeah. So, I have a big client that I do iOS development for, and then so there's an app similar to HeartTwitch called GBeat that I'm working on as well, that is the same idea, except for this is for if you're taking an online class or watching a YouTube video where there's a workout, you can chart your heart rate through that. And then I don't know, just kind of like I'm interested in full stack development, so just trying to see other things I could do to make it easier for iOS devs to get into Vapor, and ways that Vapor can make it even easier to do iOS development, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So did you know that, like, when you Google Leo Dion, you don't come up first? It, you know,
it's a guy out of Papua New Guinea, isn't it? Yeah. He's like a former governor.
Yeah, deputy prime minister, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He hasn't got a very impressive Wikipedia page, I gotta say, though.
He does or doesn't?
Does not. Got a couple of paragraphs, right? So.
Yeah. No, this...
I guess Dion's a pretty popular name, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy.
But, I mean, I think I'm starting to finally crawl up, though. Like, I got, I don't know,
Leo,
am I number two or three?
Leo Dion on YouTube, that must be you, right?
Probably, yeah.
Leo Dion 7112. Let's take a look. I don't think this is you. It's not.
I wonder if it searches based on geography too.
Yeah. You could also, but you know, I guess and I'm just talking through my hat at this point, but I think you could on your YouTube channel, I think you can put a tag in or on just on the main page with your Leo Dion name in there.
Okay.
So sort of help
you. Think that'd help
SEO? Yeah, your SEO. Yeah, yeah. No charge for that SEO tip, though.
Lucky me. Today's my lucky day.
You're glad you opened the email that I sent you about your SEO.
Yeah. So it's @brightdigit is the name for the channel.
So is YouTube /@brightdigit? Or
yeah, because you know you could do @names now in YouTube. Yeah. So yeah, it's @brightdigit. And you can see the latest episode I did with Dave and Sven on there, which I really tried to take my production to the next level.
Yeah,
for that one, because it's my first 3-person episode.
Are you scheduled to speak anywhere coming up, or
not yet? No. But if anybody is looking for a speaker, reach out to me.
Did you put a CPF into SwiftTO or
not SwiftTO? Deep Dish Pizza.
Okay, yeah, they're really in your neighborhood. So in your neighborhood, right?
Yeah, I mean. Honestly, Tim, like Chicago and Toronto are about the same distance for me.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. You're smacked. Lansing's the capital of Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm. Should I do the thing?
Thing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the
thing. Oh, that's so Michigan shaped like this?
Yeah. Well, the lower peninsula, you know.
Huh. Well, it's funny. I did look on the map earlier. Let me have a look at that.
That's the thing. If you ask any Michigander where they live, that's what they do.
They show you their hand?
Yeah. There'll be a hand and I'll be like, Oh, my video died.
No worries. Okay, so the thumb is like part of Lake Huron?
There we go.
Traverse
City. The thumb is like here. Saginaw.
Yeah, Saginaw's like
I'm doing the wrong hand, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Am I doing
the wrong Lansing's hand? Here. Grand Rapids is here. Detroit is here.
Chicago's down here.
Windsor.
Right? Yeah. Oh, Windsor's on the knuckle? Okay.
It's on the other side of the bridge, so yeah.
Yeah. And Toledo.
Yeah, like when I go to Toronto, I drove. Like when I went to where I met you. Toronto.
Okay.
I drove to Toronto.
So did we meet? We met at SwiftTO in 2019.
2019. Yep.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I was trying to think earlier how you and I, because I know I was on your show, but yeah, I guess we were both speakers at SwiftTO, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's how we met. Okay. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. I'm working on it.
Yeah. I need to buy my super, super, super early bird ticket, though.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to go.
Yeah, it's like $50 US or something like that, right?
Yeah.
No, it's $240 something dollars Canadian. I'll have a link in the show notes, but it'll probably be too late by the time people find this. But yeah, and I bought mine initially, like as soon as I heard about it. Because I'm in an NS Coder, or is it NS Coder? NS Coder is the meetup group that those guys
have. Okay.
So it's one of our Cocoa Pot or Cocoa Heads groups, right? So yeah, Kyle. Yeah.
That's
Kyle,
the other thing is I want to speak at more Cocoa Heads and MS Coders or whatever people call them now.
Yeah.
Swifty Swifts or I don't know what they call those those meetups.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, I've actually got three ideas up on what's it called? Page call. Is that what's called?
Paper call.
Yeah, I got a few on there. Because I did my one for 360 iDev. But you know, I don't know how many do you put out? I know Jaime 1 year put out like 100 and got 3.
Yeah, I put out like maybe 6 a conference.
Yeah.
6 or 7 a conference.
So 6 per conference.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that's a good idea. And then they pick and choose.
Did you speak at 360 iDev?
I did. Yeah. I did a talk on, it was unfortunate. John would have given me whatever spot I wanted, but, I was in Ireland for the first part of the conference.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha.
So I had just come back. So I recorded mine. He gave me the Wednesday slot in case I could be there in person.
Okay.
But it's usually it's the one after everybody's left, because people leave after lunch because they got to catch their planes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It used to be, we're talking about 360 iDev. It's, you know, we'll pour one out for 360 iDev because it's gone now. The Wednesday afternoon was the worst slot to be in, but so I pre-recorded mine. I recorded it actually the Saturday before we flew out to Ireland, and I edited it when I was in Ireland and I sent it to John.
Okay.
So yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So
yeah.
Me with
I did not
slides.
Speak. I mean, I submitted, but I
did
didn't
you go? Did get... you go down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there.
Oh, cool.
Yep. Yeah. Which I'm super fortunate that I got to go. Like,
yeah.
Considering that's the last one, like, I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, yeah. I got the t-shirt too, though. But I dialed in for the Stump the Experts, whatever they call it, Stump or 360. Mm-hmm. Stump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. We'll have to get Tom to come up to Canada to do a stump at SwiftTO. That's a lot of fun. I love doing the trivia stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of, that's a real blast. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tom, if you're listening, we got to do a stump at SwiftTO. That's
yes.
Thing. Yeah. And one of these times, you know, if there's other musicians out there, we should get some equipment and jam. I've been to a few conferences where, you know, they got like guitars and stuff like that. And I can't bring my guitars into the States because I'm always afraid that the airport will smash them. You know,
right.
I usually bring a ukulele, which is kind of lame, but we have an all team week in Chicago. I work for Spot Hero in Chicago, and one of my other manager buddies had a guitar there, so I didn't have to bring a guitar down. I played his, and I got to close the show. It was lots of fun. So
nice. That's,
you
know, awesome.
Get my rock god on, you know. That's fun.
What other conferences are you going to?
I've applied to Swifty New York. Is it Swift? It's not a Tri-Swift one, right?
No, it's Swifty New York.
Yeah, and I applied.
It's the same
to,
people put on PL Swift in Poland, I think.
Yeah, I applied to Deep Dish, but I haven't heard back. I'm not holding my breath at this point. But because that's, I mean, I could go work in the city for a bit of time, and then, you know, because, you know, even though we're all working from home these days, half my team's in Chicago, so it's good to go and connect with them.
Yeah.
So if
I had
a reason to be in Chicago, it'd be great.
Yeah, I bought my ticket for Deep Dish. We got a place. We're getting an Airbnb and bringing some of the kids with us.
You're bringing all the kids with you?
Not all.
Some. Just some.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm definitely going to that. Probably going to go to Swift Toronto, and then if I speak, you know, Swifty in New York, you know, I'll go to that for sure. Hmm. I've been to New York. I went there for Tri-Swift a few years ago. So yeah,
that's a good hack. I hadn't thought about that. Like putting in, I mean, I do currently have three talks in, but I hadn't thought about putting in more than one to try and get a speaking spot. It's an interesting idea for the same conference. You mean, right?
I think it was 2019 was like, or 2019 or 2020 was the year that I got like 10. No, 2020 was that I did like 10 talks that year. It was crazy.
Really? Wow.
Obviously, I think only one wasn't, no, two were in person because they were in January before the end of the world.
Heck broke out. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a fun experience.
How was the pandemic for you? Were you working all the way through, working from home? What were you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been working from home for, gosh, 10 years now. So,
oh, okay.
Like, what was different for me was, like I said, well, before the pandemic, we had only seven people living in this house. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I guess all your
decided
kids
decided to come
were,
along.
Yeah, your kids were all, yeah, they're all, some of them are in school age, right? So were they doing
yeah, from home? Yeah, so we had a three-year-old, I think. Gosh, it's so long ago now. We had a three-year-old, a preschooler, and then three school age kids, but yeah, they were home all the time, and that was the big challenge. We had a snow day yesterday, and it was definitely like, oh man,
yeah, like a mayhem. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, good luck getting anything done. But what it was like with COVID.
Oh yeah, yeah. Cool. All right, well, I'm gonna sign off now, and we'll see after show. Thanks for listening to the after show, folks. Be hung around. Yeah. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I forgot to say that earlier.
If you really think that I'm entertaining and want to hear me repeat certain phrases, then join me on my YouTube channel or Empower Episode Show.
Yeah.
YouTube channel's Bright Digit.
Yeah, and if you come up with the word that he uses the most often, don't forget to tweet it out there with the hashtag AskMTJC so we can pick it up in our future episode.
Tim will get you. If you get it right, Tim will get you the first model of Apple VR glasses.
Will I? Actually, yeah, I probably have. Let's see.
It's basically a Newton like duct taped to a pair of glasses.
Yeah, these are them right there. These are the new VR glasses right there.
Nice. Like,
so.
Ooh, you're Tim, it's great talking to you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Leo.
Yep.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.